I'll announce today is the 7th. Today is the 7th of June.
Yeah.
And we are continuing. We're on page 214 in Parshas Vayeshev, the story of Yosef and the wife of Potiphar. Now, you can move closer.
Yeah, where do you go over there? You like it? My mom could be alone.
Now, we left off with Yosef being sold into slavery and rising in prestige and in power in his master's house, in Potiphar's house. And we had said that the only thing that Potiphar withheld from Yosef was his wife, which makes sense. And then Potiphar's wife began to try to get Yosef's attention and was interested in committing adultery with Yosef. And Yosef resisted her. And we are up to the bottom of page 214, Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, which will be her final attempt to get him to live with her, and as a result, he will end up in jail. Before we read that, let me fill you in. I alluded to some of this last week, but let me fill you in on some of the points that the Gemara says regarding this story. I mentioned to you last time that she stopped at nothing to get him to notice her. The Gemara says that she would change her clothing from morning to evening so that he would always see her wearing something else. She would constantly pass in front of him. The Medrash tells us that every time she came in front of him, he would put his head down. He didn't want to look at her, which is the appropriate thing for a man to do, and would bury his face in the ground, would keep away from her, to not look at her. So remember, he had no autonomy. As I mentioned to you last time, it wasn't like he was able to simply walk out of the room. If he was doing work in that room, he had to do the work, and he had no right to walk away. He was completely controlled by his master, and by extension, his master's wife. She had a collar made for him, made of metal, that went under his chin, which prevented him from lowering his head, so that he was not able to lower his head. So when she would walk by, he could not move his head away and not look at her. That was her purpose, unless he closed his eyes, which meant he couldn't work. So she had this collar made that he could not lower his head. Instead, it went under his beard. He was unable to lower his head. That was how powerless he was to stop her advances. The Gemara says, I mentioned this to part of this to you last time, she threatened him. She said, I'll put you in jail. He said, Hashem matir asurim, Hashem frees those who are in bondage. She says, I'll bend you over, I'll put you in a room that's a small room, or I'll tie you over so you'll be bent over. And he says, Hashem zokef kifufim, Hashem straightens those who are bent. She says, I'll blind your eyes. He said, Hashem pokeach yavim, Hashem gives sight to those who are blind. And on, everything she said, he responded that, I can't do this. Hashem will save me from you, and I cannot violate my master's trust in me, and I cannot do this avera, the sin. The Gemara tells us as well that in the future, the Gemara says, you are very familiar with this, the following Gemara, but you're familiar with it more because of one of the other stories rather than this one. But the Gemara tells us that when Hashem examines those who have already passed away and then takes them to task for the lives they led, so there are various excuses a person can have for why they didn't serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu properly, why they didn't study Torah, why they didn't do the right thing. And a person who's very poor may say, I was too poor. I couldn't really keep the Torah properly because it was too difficult. I was too impoverished. Someone who was very wealthy may say that I had no time to focus on Torah because I was so busy with all of my wealth. Hashem, you gave me all that wealth. I couldn't ignore my wealth. And a person may say that my taiva, my desires were so powerful that they overcame me, they overwhelmed me. It wasn't possible for me to resist. So the Gemara says if a person will say those excuses in the future, Hashem will cite three examples to counter those excuses. The Gemara tells us, Hillel mechayev es ha'aniyim. Hillel obligates the impoverished. Hashem will say, are you any more impoverished? Were you any more impoverished than Hillel? And that's the famous story with Hillel, who couldn't even pay the couple of pennies it took to get into the study hall, to the Beis Medrash, and therefore he had to go up on the roof. And it snowed on the roof, and he was frozen solid. That whole story where Hillel became famous, that's in this Gemara, in the context of Hashem saying to the person who claims poverty, Hashem will say, are you any worse than Hillel was? And Hillel was able to serve me. You should have been able to do it as well. For the wealthy, there was a man, Rav Elazar ben Charsum, who was so wealthy, and then the Gemara tells us how he was able to turn away from his wealth and focus on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But for the one who claims that he was so overwhelmed by his desires, Hashem, you know, Hashem gives us our desires. We're human beings. Hashem made us human beings. We all have a set of qualities, both positive and negative, and we all have different sets of desires. Some people desire different things, different amounts. Everybody has different levels of desire for various types of things. And if someone says, I was just so overwhelmed and I couldn't control myself, Hashem will say to him, were you in any greater predicament than Yosef? Yosef was not only, he too had an innate desire, but also he was in the worst situation for a person with an innate desire. He had this woman who was a married woman who was constantly trying to get him to notice her. And yet he resisted, and Yosef is mechayev es harishah, and Yosef therefore obligates those who were not able to control their desires. That's what the Gemara tells us based on this story. When Yosef resists the wife of Potiphar, he gets a title that he's now known by. Hatzadik. Yosef Hatzadik. Yosef the righteous one. He is called Hatzadik, the righteous one, because he resists the advances of the wife of Potiphar.
Is that the first time someone has been called that?
Well, the word tzaddik we find further back with Avraham Avinu, but when in the words of the Gemara, when the Gemara refers to different people, Yosef has the title tzaddik when he's referred to. So that is as a result of this story. So, and one more thing I will tell you is that. Well, you know what, the last thing I'm going to save until we get to, there's a pasuk we need to see, there's a phrase we need to see before I can tell you the next point. So, pasuk Yud Aleph 11, on the bottom of page 214, Vayihi ki hayom hazeh, was like this day, Vayavo habaisa la'asos melachto, he came to the house to do his work, Ve'ein ish me'anshe habais sham babayis, there was no man from the men of the house there in the house. And she grabbed him by his clothing to say, you should consort with me. He left his clothing in her hand. He ran away and went outside. It was when she saw that he left his clothing in her hand and he ran outside. She called to the men of her house, and she said to them, saying, Re'u si, hevi lanu ish ivri l'tzachek banu. He brought for us, meaning her husband, he brought for us an ish ivri, a man from the other side of the river, meaning a man from Eretz Canaan, from the land of Israel. L'tzachek banu, to, how do they say it over here? To sport with us. Okay. Boy Lime Shkavi me. That's right. Boy Lime Shkavi me. He came to consort with me. Voy Krobakogadol, and I called out in a loud voice. And it was when he heard Kiharimosi Kolivo Ekra that I lifted my voice and I called out. Vayazov Bigdo Etzli, and he left his clothing with me. Vayonas Vayitzei Achutza, and he ran away and he went outside. So in a classic way that has been repeated many times. So the wife of Potiphar attempts to turn the tables on Yosef, where she was the one who tried to seduce him. When he runs away, she claims that he was trying to molest her. And then when she called, she claims that she screamed, and that's why he ran away. Vatanach bigdo etzla, and she left his clothing with her. Evidently, she was keeping it as evidence. Adbo adonav el beiso, until his master came to his house. Vatadabrei lov, and she said to him, kadivorim ha'eva leimor, like these words saying, boi lai ha'evido yivriya shehebeiso lano letzakrik bi. This slave from the other side of the river that you brought here, he came to me to make sport of me. Vayihi, and it was, kairimi kolivo ekra, when I lifted my voice and I called out, I screamed. Vayazov bigdo etzli, he left his clothing with me. Vayonas achutza, and he ran away outside. Vayihi chishmoa adonav es divrei ishto, and it was when his master heard the words of his wife. Asha dibro elav lemar, that she said to him, saying, kadvarim ha'ela asa li avdecha, like these things your slave did to me. Vayichar apo, and he became very angry. Vayikach Adonai Yosef Osoa, and the master of Yosef took him. Vayitnehu el beis hasoa, and put him in the jail. Mekom asher asirei hamelech asurim, the place where the political prisoners were held, where the prisoners of the king were held. Vayihisha beis hasoa, and he was there in the house of the jail. We're going to stop here for the moment. We're up now to Pasuk Chafal 21. We're going to stop here because now it shifts to the jail and Yosef's experience in jail. Yeah.
Rabbi, you said that Yosef was known as a tzaddik. Going back right to Noach, he didn't prove himself, and he was classed in training and also as a tzaddik.
Right. The Torah calls him Ish Tzaddik. Right, that's a good example. Even before Avraham. That's very good. But the Torah calls Noach Ish Tzaddik, but he's not known as Noach HaTzaddik. That's not the point I'm making. Well, even if he would be called a Tzaddik without the people of his time, that's a difference of opinion, but he's not known in the Gemara. The title is not Noach HaTzaddik. Yosef is always called Yosef HaTzaddik. That's the way the Gemara. Moshe is always called Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe our teacher. Abraham is always called Abraham Avinu, our father. Yosef is always called Yosef HaTzadik. That's the way he's always quoted in the Gemara. That's the way he's always. That's the title he's always given. Yeah.
Potiphar's wife was. She wasn't Jewish.
Correct.
So was she a prophetess that she knew that she was going to have a...
We mentioned last week that she saw in the stars that she knew of a connection. Stargazers.
Astrology.
Astrology. Astrology does tell the future to a point, if you know how to read it. Today nobody knows how to read it. All the astrologers today are all fake. But there is such a thing as astrology. There is such a wisdom called astrology. It's just a question of knowing how to read the stars properly.
The daughter who didn't believe that he had done, and she stuck up for Joseph. Potiphar's daughter.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there is a medrash like that. I'm not going to mention that one. There's other things to mention as well over here. So let's go back over here. First of all, what was this? What was the Torah mean when it says back in Pasuk Gedalf 11 that it was on this day? On a particular day, and he came to the house to do his work, and there was no man from the men of the house there, in the house. So what was the day? It seems like it was a particular day. So Rashi tells us it was a holiday of theirs. It was a pagan holiday, and they all went to worship their deity. And when they went, the wife of Potiphar realized, this is the best chance I have of getting Yosef, because no one's going to be in the house but him. And so she claimed she was sick, and therefore she stayed home, and now she had a chance to get Yosef. So then it says that Yosef came to the house to do his work, and there were no men in the house there. Now, when it says that he came to do his work, there are two opinions in the Gemara. One is that he came to do his work. The other is that he came to do his work with her. In other words, that she had finally worn him down, and his resistance had finally broken, and he actually was coming to the house in order to finally give in to her advances. And that's what he was doing. So then, how come it didn't happen? So the Gemara tells us that at the last moment, the face of his father Yaakov appeared in front of him, and there was a whole conversation that Yosef in the future, it would be that we know the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, wears the Choshen, the breastplate, which has stones on it with all the names of all of the tribes, and also on his shoulders he has two stones engraved in it are the names of all the tribes, and his father said to him, "Do you want your name not to be there?" And he realized what he was going to lose by living with her, and so he ran out. Now, if you say the first explanation, he was coming in just to do his work. Okay, so he was caught, he was doing his work, she caught him, and he ran away. If you say the second explanation, the question everybody asks is, so he had given up. He had done a valiant job in having resisted her until now with all of her advances. It was a whole year that she was after him, and he resisted for a very long time. That's wonderful, but in the end he did give in. So why does he deserve that now the face of Yaakov should all of a sudden appear? You know, it would be wonderful if I was about to yell at my children, and all of a sudden the face of Yaakov would appear in front of me and say to me, "Would you like to lose your position in the next, okay, I won't yell at my kids." Right? It would stop me in my tracks. So it would be wonderful. How come that doesn't happen to me? It seems a little bit unfair, and Yosef gets the title Yosef HaTzadik because his father's face appeared to him. So most of the Mefarshim say that it does not mean that there was a divine intervention over here. What it means is that Yosef, because of who he was and because he had worked on himself, so that was how did he prevent himself from falling? He was in a pagan culture. There were no other Jews around. Imagine being in this society, being there in that house, not as an autonomous person. He was a slave. He had to do whatever they did. He had to be with them whenever they were with them. And this woman was after him for a whole year. How did he maintain his righteousness? How did he do it? And so many of the Mefarshim explain, Yosef did it by remembering where he came from. He always remembered his roots. Never let himself forget the face of his father Yaakov. He always thought about where he came from and what he really stood for. And therefore, at the critical moment when his resistance was low and he was about to give in, that's what flashed before his eyes. It wasn't a divine intervention. It was his own subconscious. That's what flashed before his eyes. He thought to himself, "One second, where am I going? What am I doing?" And with that, he was able to run away. And that's how he saved himself. Now, there are some curiosities that we need to examine over here very carefully. She grabbed his clothing. He ran outside. The Mefarshim say he was wearing other clothing. This was not his only clothing. This was his outer, like a jacket. It should be noted that is this the first time that Yosef's outer jacket was removed? Okay, so Yosef's clothing seems to be forcibly removed from him on several occasions. We have it before, where the brothers took off his tunic and dipped it in blood. They took it away from him. And here, his clothing is removed, and he has to run away. But there are some curiosities over here. Who was stronger, Yosef or the wife of Potiphar? Yosef was very likely much stronger. We're going to see later that we know already that Yaakov was a very, very powerful man. Remember before when he met Rachel for the first time, he moved that stone off of the well as if it was nothing. Rashi says like popping a cork off of a bottle. And nobody says it was some kind of a miracle. Rashi says, Melamed Shekocho Gadol, this teaches us that Yaakov was a very, very strong man. He was physically a powerful man. His sons were also powerful. As we'll see later on, we're going to find that when the brothers are in Egypt and they're dealing with Yosef, they don't know it's Yosef, and Yosef threatens to take away Shimon and then take away Binyamin. He threatens the brothers. The brothers say back, if you sign up with us, we'll kill you, we'll kill everybody here in Egypt. You can send the army against us. We'll wipe them all out. We'll take them all on. They weren't afraid. They were very, very strong people, our ancestors, the tribes. And Yosef was no exception. He was a very powerful man. It's curious that he leaves the evidence with her. He could have grabbed his baguette. He could have grabbed his clothing. She wasn't actually screaming. She claimed, I screamed, so, you know, I sounded the alarm, so the police were coming, so he ran away in haste. But we know that's not what happened. What happened is, he ran away because he didn't want to get involved with her. So he could have grabbed his clothing and run. Why did he leave the clothing with her? Now that question, which I'm asking you, bothered Potiphar as well. Something didn't compute well over here. Why would he leave the clothing with her? It doesn't make sense. He knows that he'd be incriminated by his clothing. It's very strange, even if she screamed, that he didn't grab his clothing first and run away. So you could say, well, he was running in such haste he couldn't think straight, he ran away. But Yosef was a very put-together person. This we already know. Potiphar put Yosef in charge of everything. Yosef was very organized, very put together, a person with a lot of self-awareness and self-control, a person who really, it was strange that he wouldn't have thought through all the angles and left his clothing with her. And that's something which bothered Potiphar, which answers a question, because it's very strange. Why did he throw Yosef in jail? Why didn't he
kill him?
That's the strangest thing of all. Yosef starts up with the master's wife, off with his head. What kind of business is that? You leave him alive? You put him in jail? That really doesn't make sense. This is a man, a slave, who starts up with the master's wife. That's it. It's over. The slaves, there was no value to their life. And if that's what happens, he's finished. You don't put him in jail. Hmm. Particularly in the jail of the political prisoners, with the king's prisoners. It's really very, very strange. But Potiphar's wife suspected that there was something amiss over here. Potiphar suspected there was something amiss over here. Plus, bear in mind, she's been after him for a year. Don't you think that Potiphar must have noticed that his wife had interest in Yosef?
Mm-hmm.
That would be very difficult for her to cover up that for a whole year she was after Yosef. So Potiphar is aware that there's something that doesn't really fit in the story. The Medrash tells us that in order to incriminate Yosef, when Yosef ran away, she took egg whites and spread them on the bed to make it appear as if something had actually happened. That's what she did. That's what the Medrash tells us. And she showed it to her husband. So her husband went to the priests of the time, the Komrim, the priests, who were also wise in the sciences. They were aware of the sciences of the time, the scientific knowledge of the time. And he asked them, how can I prove whether what's on the bed is what she wants me to think it is, or whether it's actually something else, like egg whites? So the priests told him that if you hold a candle, fire, close to it, the way it will react is different depending on whether it is egg or what she wants you to think it is. And he experimented and discovered that it was really egg. And realized that she had made up a story and was trying to frame Yosef. More than that, what really incensed him is the following. I'm going to skip ahead for a minute. I'm going to come back to the psukim in a minute. But if you skip ahead, in Pasuk Yud Tes 19, it says, Vayehi chishmoa Adonav es divrei ishto, and it was when his master heard the words of his wife, Asher dibra elav lemor, that she said to him, saying, Kadvarim ha'ele asa li avdecha, like these things your slave did to me. Vayicharapo, he became very angry. Rashi tells us in the name of Chazal, what does it mean, like these things your slave did to me? When she first reported the story, he didn't really react. because he suspected that it wasn't really Yosef at fault, it was really her at fault. But then, when she was actually involved with a physical relationship with her husband, she said, like these things that we are doing now, that's what your slave did to me. And she pointed out to him that in demonstrative ways what she claimed he did to her. So that got him incensed, because he knew she was making up a story. And it got him incensed that she was willing to demonstrate even actual demonstrations of what he did, meaning he realized what she was really after, which is that she was after Yosef. He got very angry.
At her.
At her, correct. Yeah. He was incensed at her, because he was now between a rock and a hard place. What is he supposed to do? He can't leave Yosef unpunished, because if he does that, his wife will say, what kind of a man are you? What kind of a husband are you? What are you doing? You're slave, and she's reporting this to the press. She's announcing it to everyone who will listen, that Yosef attacked me. And here, he's doing nothing about it. On the other hand, what's he supposed to do with his wife? His wife, essentially, he knows what his wife did, so he's incensed. He has no choice. He doesn't want to kill Yosef, because Yosef is such a great slave. He's wonderful. He's running the house. And so Potiphar puts him in the political jail. Why the political jail? Why not just the regular jail? Because Potiphar is also the one who's in charge of the political jail. We will see later, next week, not this week, but we will see later that Potiphar will use Yosef while in the jail. He will be able to use Yosef's services in the jail, that he'll be able to still make use of this great slave Yosef in the jail, even though of course he won't be as effective as he was as the head of Potiphar's house, but there'll still be something he can get out of Yosef. So this is what is going on in Potiphar's mind and with his wife.
Why did Yosef leave the coat?
So why did he leave the coat? Good. So why did he leave the coat? So I'm trying to remember who says it. I think it was the Sfarno who says it. I don't remember who says it. Yosef did not take the coat away from her because he was a slave. And he felt that it was improper for him to overpower her. He couldn't bring himself to do it. He had to keep himself from sinning. So in order to sin, he ran away. That he did against her will. But to go and physically overpower her and grab the coat away from her, that he would not do, because he was a slave and she was his master. So he was not willing to do that. That is why he didn't grab the coat away. Yosef, and you see, Potiphar was aware of this as well. Potiphar understood that Yosef was the perfect slave. He was the one who acted in a subservient fashion and would never do anything to hurt or overpower his master or his master's wife. Yosef was stronger than Potiphar as well. Yosef was stronger than whatever police force could be there to subdue him. But he was a slave, and he acted like a slave. And so Potiphar understood there was something strange going on. Now I want to call your attention to a few of the other verses that we just skipped. If you go back to Pasuk Yud Beis, again top of the page, verse 12, she grabbed him by the clothing to say, consort with me. Vayazov bigdo biyada, and he left his clothing in her hand. Vayonos vayetze hachutza, and he ran away and he went outside. The Medrash tells us that when the Jews were leaving Egypt many years later, and we came to the Red Sea, so the Red Sea split, and we were able to cross the sea. In what merit did it split? What caused it to split? So the Gemara tells us that what did it see to split? What did the sea see? What did the S-E-A, S-E-E? What did it see? Because the Pasuk says in Tehillim, which we say in Hallel, Hayam ra'a vayanos. The sea, S-E-A, saw and ran away. What did the sea see, S-E-E, and run away from? It saw Arono Shel Yosef, the coffin of Yosef. The Jews were carrying the coffin of Yosef, and when the sea saw that coffin, when the coffin came before the sea, then it had to split. It parted for the coffin of Yosef. How does the Medrash know that? Because the language used is Hayam Ra'a, the sea saw, Vayanos, and it ran away, which is the same word over here as he left his clothing in her hand, Vayanos, and he ran away. In the merit of Yosef fleeing from the wife of Potiphar, in that merit, the sea fled from before the coffin of Yosef. Yes?
There's a story that the sea split because of Nachshon.
Correct. Nachshon ben Aminadab jumped in.
They're both right.
There's another medrash that it was the tribe of Binyamin that jumped in and caused it to split. All of them are correct. The question is a matter of levels, a matter of gradations, meaning like this. The reason why the sea had to split was for the coffin of Yosef. But what caused it to split at that moment? The Jews had to demonstrate that they believed in Hashem, and that Hashem said it was going to split. So it didn't split, it was just there. So Nachshon ben Aminadab jumped in and went up to his nose to show that he was ready to just keep walking. He was willing to walk to where he couldn't breathe anymore, and then it split. So that's what caused it to happen at that moment. But why ultimately did it split? It was because of Yosef's coffin. Hayam ra'av ayanos, the sea saw, and it fled.
You know, there's another thing that surprises me, that Yaakov was with Yosef all the time. So wasn't that urge to get in touch with his father, you know, that he held it out until the correct moment when he was in Mitzrayim, you know, in the court of Pharaoh, that Yaakov actually held him back all the time. You know, he guarded him. He was on his side all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty strange that he took so long.
At this point he had no authority to do it. You're asking later on, once he became the viceroy, why didn't he send for Yaakov?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's save that question for when we get to his being promoted to viceroy. Right now he has no power to do that.
It's very strange. Because with Potiphar's wife, you know, attacked him that he saw his face of Yaakov. Wasn't that the time to get that? But he held out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's gonna. Okay. Good. The way that the Medrash knows that she tried to frame him by spreading egg white on the bed is because if you look in Pasuk, in Yud Dalet 14, Vatikrama Anshei Beisa, and she called to the men of her house, Vatomer Lohem Lemor, and she said to them, saying, Re'u, see, Hei Vilanu Ishi Vilatachek Banu. My husband brought a man from the other side of the river to make sport with us. So the word re'u, see, what was she showing them? So the simple answer is she showed him the clothing. But what the Medrash is saying, she showed them the egg whites on the bed. when Yosef left the clothing with her and ran away, now, really, the wife of Potiphar was in a bind. You see, the wife of Potiphar, did she want Yosef dead?
No.
No. Did she want Yosef in jail? No. She wanted Yosef with her. So she really was in a bind at this point, because when she grabbed him, and then he ran away, so she was stuck. Because as long as he would run away and not say anything, which he wouldn't, he couldn't, so then nothing would happen. But she had his clothing, and he was without his clothing. And that's incriminating evidence. It hurts her. What is she supposed to do right now? So that's why the Pasuk says in Yud Gimel 13, Vayihi kir osak yazav bigdo biyada, was when she saw that he left his clothing in her hand, Vayana sachutz, and ran away outside. Now she's stuck. She was really in trouble. And so she was really stuck between the obviously incriminating evidence that she attacked him, or to turn the tables and say that it was actually he who had attacked her.
You think that's why he left the clothing in her hands?
No,
so
I don't.
She would look suspicious.
I don't think so, because it was so easy for her to claim it was him who attacked her.
Yeah.
So I don't think he did it on purpose.
Yeah. If she went outside to call the men to show them, why didn't they hear? I mean, there's a confusion there. She said she screamed, but they didn't hear her scream.
Right.
They're not there.
They're not there. They're all at the pagan holiday.
But she said, it says she just went out.
It doesn't say she went out. It says she called them.
So well, if she called away or something.
Well, I don't know how she knows. She picked up the phone. I don't know how to do it. She said, I don't know how she got them. But what she's claiming is that she screamed, even though there was no one to hear, but that scared him off. Right? It's like, it's like an alarm system. No one has to actually hear it. But the fact that there's an alarm, it scares people off. It's supposed to anyway.
Well, it also appears that Potiphar knew his wife because he loved Joseph. He took Joseph personally to the jail. Nobody, normally when you're angry with somebody and you want to throw them in jail, you're not taking yourself to jail.
Well, we don't know that it was personal. I mean, it just says... That's true. It does say he took him. That's true. It says he put him. Right. That's a good point. Okay. Yes.
He was enraged. Obviously, he didn't believe his wife, and he really liked Joseph.
Yeah, that's
he trusted him, so he went with him in the jail to protect him.
I know.
Yeah. Now, look in Pasuk verse 20, that Pasuk which Mrs. Starkman just brought up. Vayikach Adonai Yosef Oso, the master of Yosef took him, vayitnehu el beis ha-sohar, and put him in the jail, mekom asher asirei ha-melech asurim, the place where the political prisoners, the king's prisoners, were locked up. Vayisham beis ha-sohar, he was there in the jail. That is repetitious, but notice the word asirei. Look on the Hebrew side, and the word, this is a kri and ksiv, which means the word is written one way, but read a different way. The word is spelled Aleph Samech Vav Reish Yud, but it's read Aleph Samech Yud Reish Yud. The spelling is in the main text, and the way it's read is on the right side in the margin. So the way it says it is Asurei, and we read it Asirei. So the Vav is changed to a Yud. Grammatically, the right way to write it would have been with a Vav, the way it's actually written, Asurei. That's grammatically the correct way to say it. Those who are prisoners of the king, Asurei HaMelech Asurim. That would have been the correct grammatical way to say it. But the Torah changes the Vav to a Yud in the way that you read it. Asirei. Let me just make a point about this. There are several different places in the Chumash where a word is spelled one way but read another way. Those are Halacha LaMoshe MiSinai. Those are that was transmitted from Moshe that it is to be written this way but read that way. It's no different than any of the other Torah Shebaal Peh, any of the other oral Torah, which tells us how to vowelize a word, how to grammatically break up a sentence. All of that is Torah Shebaal Peh. All of that is the oral Torah. Words such as this, where it is written one way but said another way, is also part of the oral Torah, part of the oral tradition. So Asurei, although it's written with a Vav correctly, it's pronounced Asirei with a Yud. Aleph Samach Yud Reish Yud. The Balaturim tells us the reason for this is because the Torah is trying to emphasize the letter Yud. Why the letter Yud? What is the gematria of the letter Yud, the numerical value?
10.
Yud is 10. Not 10 years, good guess. Well, it could be 10 years. Some say he was in jail for 10 years. But the Balaturim says it's to tell us that the reason why Yosef was put in jail was because he spoke Lashon Hara about
10
brothers. About his 10 brothers. Not Binyamin, because he didn't speak Lashon Hara about Binyamin, but the other 10 brothers he spoke Lashon Hara about. And because of that, he got 10 years of jail. 1 year for every brother that he spoke Lashon Hara about. That is according... Not everybody says he was in jail for 10 years. Some say he was in jail for less than that, as we'll point out in a moment. But we'll follow this opinion that it was 10 years in jail. It was 1 year with the wife of Potiphar, in Potiphar's house, 10 years in jail, 1 year for each brother that he spoke about. Remember, we learned at that time when we talked about what he said, that he wasn't speaking terrible Lashon Hara, that he had very good reasons for why he was saying what he was saying. He wasn't just bad-mouthing his brothers, and he wasn't just gossiping about his brothers, but on his level, for where he was holding, he should have been more careful, the Torah is telling us, and as a result, he got a year for each of those brothers. It's harsh, it's frightening on the level of punishment for Lashon Hara. The Lashon Hara is one of those things, we talk about it frequently, about how terrible Lashon Hara is, and who of us can say that we never ever speak Lashon Hara, or listen to Lashon Hara? But it's one of those sins that it's very hard to justify. You know, when we hear of people who commit this, that, or the other sin, we're very quick to say, let's not be judgmental. We don't want to be judgmental of other people. You know, a person didn't act properly in one way or another. Even sins that are immoral, we're willing to try not to be judgmental. You don't know where they're coming from. You don't know what the pressures are and stresses of their lives are. You don't know what their background is. Everybody has different challenges, and we're very quick to avoid judgment. Lashon Hara is one of those sins that's very difficult to justify. Because no matter where a person is coming from, and no matter what background they have, and no matter how learned they are or not learned they are, but to gossip, there's very little justification for it. And we all know that. We all know. And we all know we shouldn't do it. And most of us do it anyway. And it's a very frightening thing to know that Hashem does not take it lightly. Lashon Hara is one of those things that Hashem just doesn't just let it pass. And it's a frightening thing. I speak for myself as well. It's a frightening, frightening thing. It's something that we really need, all of us, to strengthen ourselves and keep ourselves from gossiping about other people. It's a very, very important mitzvah in the Torah that above all else, to make sure to keep our words positive about other people and not, God forbid, negative. Yosef gets 10 years in prison for speaking Lashon Hara about 10 of his brothers. Yeah.
What about people who really don't know the laws of Lashon Hara and therefore are kind of addicted to...
You know that Jews. You know ignorance is no excuse for the law, right?
Excuse me?
Ignorance is no excuse for the law. Right? You're asking about someone who did not grow up with anything, any sort of learning, and therefore has no idea. The same reason why many people don't keep other mitzvahs of the Torah. That's what you're asking. So, that is an excuse up to a point. It's an excuse up to a point. When a person does learn and know that it's wrong, everybody in this room, we all know that it's wrong. So we need to be careful. Let's pause for a moment and think through the chronology of Yosef's being sold, and for all the years that he's away from his brothers. He's away for a total of 22 years. How old was he when he was sold?
17.
Okay, he was 17 years old. We may as well put this up on the board. He was 17 years old when he was sold. Okay. Let's put this down here. Okay. He is 17 when he is sold. Okay. How many years is he in Potiphar's house?
One, I think.
Okay, so he's there for 1 year. In Potiphar's house, I'm going to put the number here for how many years he was there. That's his age. He was 18 years old. That's in Potiphar's house. Okay.
Well, did it take a little time when he was sold till they got there?
Yeah. But if you say that he was in jail for 10 years, then that's going to be just you're right. It'll take some time, a couple of months, whatever it is. But by and large, he was in Potiphar's house for a year. Then it would be for 10 years. He is in jail. I'm looking at it, the prime of his life, from 18 to 28, and he is in jail. Okay. We are going to find that he will eventually interpret the dreams of the butler and the baker, as we'll talk about. And then he is going to make a mistake, as we'll see at the end of the parasha. We'll talk about that, not this week. When we get to it, we'll talk about it. But in the end, he's going to get 2 more years in jail. He will get 2 more years added to his jail time, which we'll say added time in jail. Sorry about that. Now, his sentence was not a 10-year sentence. His sentence was forever. It was life in prison. You didn't. There was no such thing as a prison term. You were thrown in jail. That's where you were. And something had to happen to get you out. But as far as Hashem was concerned, he was supposed to be in jail for 10 years, and then he got 2 more years added onto his jail time. And then, at 30 years old, is when he becomes king. And then, you're going to have the 2 years of plenty. The 2 years of plenty. The 7 years of plenty. 7 years of plenty go from when Yosef is 30 till he's 37 years old. And then the years of famine begin. And the famine years go for 2 years before his brothers come down to Egypt. And there you have the 22 years from age 17 until age 39 that Yosef is sold until he meets up with his brothers again. So again, it's 1 year with Potiphar, 10 years in jail, 2 more years added to the jail time, 7 years of famine, of plenty, and 2 years of famine.
Now, at which point was he freed from the jail?
He was freed right away when the years of plenty began, because he was free to interpret Paro's dreams, as we will see. He remained in jail until Paro had his dreams, and then he has then the years of plenty start immediately.
Okay.
We will discuss these years very, very much in depth when we get up to them. We're not up to them yet, but I want you to see the 22 years and how it all shakes out in chronologically. Okay, so now what happens in jail? Let's read a few more. So can we have a few more minutes left? Let's finish up till the end of the paragraph. Pasuk Chavala, verse 21. Vayhi Hashem es Yosef, and Hashem was with Yosef. Vayet elav chasad, and he turned to him kindness. Vayitain chino b'nei sar beis hasohar, and he put his charm, his chen, as we know, Jewish chen, he put his chen in the eyes of the officer in charge of the jail, the warden of the jail. As usual, Yosef rises to prominence. It doesn't matter if he's a slave, doesn't matter if he's a prisoner, it doesn't matter if he's a king. Yosef rises to prominence no matter where he is. Just immediately within that station that he is, he rises to prominence. So immediately Yosef is recognized as being an extra special prisoner, and he rises to prominence. Vayitain sar beis hasor b'yad Yosef, and the warden puts in the hands of Yosef es kol ha'asirim asher beis hasor, all the prisoners that were in the jail. He puts him in charge of all the prisoners. The es kol asher osim sham, and everything that was done there, hu haya oseh, literally means he did, which means it was done by his work. Yosef was in charge of all that went on in the jail. Obviously, he couldn't free them, but who would get the exercise room, and who would get meals when, and whether it would be milchik or fleishik served that day. It was all under Yosef's control. Ein sar beis hasor ro'es kol me'uma biyado. The warden would not see anything in the hands of Yosef, which means he wouldn't even bother checking. The same thing we saw with Potiphar, that he didn't even bother the double checking Yosef's work. Yosef was doing it, so Yosef survived. It's all good. It's in Yosef's hands. So the warden didn't bother checking after Yosef. Ba'asher Hashem ito, that Hashem was with him. Ba'asher hu hosen, everything he did. Hashem matzliach, Hashem made successful. Yosef is constantly successful, no matter where he is. He's always successful. Hashem is constantly making him successful. He's still a prisoner. And jail was not a fun place to be. As I mentioned to you before, what was jail like? What did it look like? What kind of building was it?
It was a pit, you said.
It was a pit in the ground. It wasn't a building. It was a pit in the ground. Those were the jails that they had in those days. It was not a fun place to be at all. It was a deep pit in the ground, and that's where Yosef is in the Beis HaSohar, in this jail. we've talked about this before, how Yosef goes through a series of time of being dropped into pits. Mm-hmm. He was thrown into a pit by his brothers. Over there was a whole discussion of which pit to throw him into, but he's lowered into a pit. He's sold into slavery. Now he's lowered into a pit again. And he will eventually, when he comes out of the pit, he will rise not only out of the pit, but he will rise to great prominence and become the viceroy of Egypt, which essentially puts him second in command to the entire known world once the years of famine and plenty begin, when Egypt rises to become the world power that it is.
How does Potiphar feel about that?
We'll get to that. We're going to get to that. Remember, he marries his daughter. So we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
Yes?
It's interesting to see how Hashem did the Avos and translated him to Yosef. So when we realize Yaakov, with Lavan, with the cattle, and no matter how Lavan tried to trick him, Yaakov was always machleistic. So we see this following through with Yosef, he takes the leadership there.
Yeah. It's true.
Could it be taken one step further that it also gets translated to the Jews in general? I mean, we're a teeny percentage of the population, and
Jews always rise to prominence. That is, it does happen. That is correct, which also raises the anti-Semitism around us, because we're constantly rising to prominence, despite the fact that we are so few in number, and proportionally such a small element of the population. And that is true.
Did anyone, Potiphar's wife, complain about Joseph when she had his clip in her hand, and what she described him as the one from the other side? Again, like a typical anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
Maybe the first one.
Well, not the first one. I think Nimrod was the first one.
Recorded in the Torah.
Yeah.
It's the same fashion.
From the other side. Not one of us. We mentioned that the reason why Yosef constantly gets thrown into the pit is because there was something about leadership that he still needed to learn before he was able to rise to the leadership position. Yosef was born to be a king. That's what he was meant to be. The dreams that he had about his brothers bowing down to him, that was not false. Those were real dreams. As we said, the brothers thought that he was just dreaming about what he was thinking about, but they weren't really real. But we know that they were prophetic. That Hashem was telling Yosef that he was destined to be king. But at the same time, there were elements of Yosef's character that needed to be refined before he could become king. And Yosef needs to learn that by being not by going to king school, which you laugh about, but the kings of old would send their children to schools, or they would hire people who would train them how to act with aristocracy. Because there was a certain way that you carried yourself as a king, in a certain way that you did things you did and things you didn't do. And also, it was pasnished. It was beneath the level of a prince to be playing ball with the plebes, with the other kids. I mean, he was the prince. He would eventually be the king, and they had to have respect for him. There was a certain stoltz. There was a certain way that they had to carry themselves. Yosef, the way he learned to be the king was not by going to a school that taught him how to walk around with a certain air of greatness about him. The way he learned to be king was to be thrown into a pit, be pulled out of a pit and be a slave, and be thrown back down into a pit and be a prisoner. This is how he learned to be king. And those lessons will stand for him. They will help him out a great deal later on when he actually is king and he has to deal with his brothers later on. We will find that his experience in the pits and as being a prisoner and being a slave will help him out a great deal and how to handle that. My question for you is, in the last few minutes we have, as soon as we answer Linda's question, is going to be, why is it that Yosef has to have his clothing taken from him two times? What does that symbolize? Yes?
I think of David when you mentioned that. He suffered so much. Mm-hmm. It made him... And the
correct.
Jewish people, they go down and come up.
Correct. King David, David HaMelech, who is really the quintessential king, he is royalty, and he too does not learn how to be king by being sent to a special school. King David learns to become king by being despised, and by being involved with shepherding, taking care of sheep. That's how he learns how to be the leader, how to be king. That is correct. That is correct.
What about Moshe?
Moshe also was a shepherd.
Didn't he grow up in the house of Pharaoh?
Yeah, Moshe grew up in the house of
Pharaoh. He must have been taught the ways of kings.
Yeah, Moshe was taught the ways of kings. That is correct. However, Moshe ends up having to run away and ends up also with shepherding in order to learn that as well. But why is it that Yosef's clothing have to be removed two times? What does that symbolize? What does that teach us?
Transformation.
Okay, transformation, that's good. You mean it's symbolic of him being a changed man. Okay.
The clothes is a symbol of his greatness, royalty.
Well, the first time is a symbol of his greatness. The second time was regular clothing. He was a slave at the second time.
But he was a very unusual slave. He probably wasn't wearing some dirty old clothes.
Okay. Okay, that is...
Sometimes it seems like there's some significance.
Okay, so we are what we wear to a very great extent. The clothing makes the man is not just an idiom. It really does have significance. You'll notice that when people dress in a certain way, they will act in a certain way. They will carry themselves in a certain way. If a person dresses in a formal manner, they will generally carry themselves in a formal way. It doesn't mean they can't act in an informal or crass manner, but they will naturally carry themselves in a more formal way when they are dressed in a formal way. If a person is dressed casually, they will tend to act more casual. They'll tend to just be more relaxed because their clothing reflects that. And the same applies to dressing modestly and dressing immodestly. When people dress in a certain way, that clothing does reflect. The way they act reflects their clothing. This is why schools that want to have a certain behavior, they will enforce a certain dress code, because the dress code will cause a certain sense of how people act. The army, when the army has soldiers press their uniforms and polish their shoes, it's a funny thing. What are soldiers supposed to do? They're supposed to be in war. What do they do in war? They get filthy. What do they do in war? They're rolling in the dust, in the dirt. I mean, there's nothing more dirty, more filthy than being in a war, than fighting. I mean, that's what happens. Yet the army says you've got to have everything's got to be just so perfect. The buttons have to be polished and the shoes have to be polished and everything's got to be pressed and everything's got to be perfect. Why is that? Because the military demands a great deal of rigidity, a great deal of formations and being and hierarchy and saluting and understanding who's in charge and who's subservient, etc. You got to know where you stand. That's necessary for an army to run properly. And the army understands that if you want people to act that way, they need to dress that way as well. They have to, the clothing has to reflect the type of behavior that you're looking for. The clothing being removed from Yosef both times is also symbolic of Yosef needing to learn how to wear the clothing. The tunic originally was removed from Yosef because, as we said then, Yosef wasn't quite ready to be the leader, to wear that tunic. Eventually he was going to, but not that tunic, but to wear royal clothing. But he wasn't ready for it. It was removed from him, which was symbolic of that he needed to learn something before getting there. Here as well, the clothing that he's wearing again is removed and is replaced by prisoner's clothing because Yosef still needs to learn something. It's not the same thing as before. He's getting there. He's almost there. But there's something more he needs to learn. And once he gets there, he will have, a meteoric rise from being a prisoner to being the viceroy over the entire country of Egypt and eventually the entire known world. So we'll continue Mir Sashem next week. Next week we're back to the regular time of 7:30. That's on the 14th. On the 21st, please stay tuned to the Shabbos flyer, because I'm not sure what time class will be that night. I will know, hopefully, by next week, by next Sunday, what we'll do. But the 14th will be at 7:30 regular time. The 21st, I'm not sure yet. I'm going to have to adjust the time, and I'm not sure exactly when it will be yet. The 28th, I will be out of town. So the 28th, we will not be having class. So that's the schedule the next 3 weeks. The 14th, regular time, 21st, stay tuned, and 28th, I am out of town.